Let's jump right in. Chapter one, Derek, ignore human nature at your own peril. What does that title mean for you?
Human nature dictates that negative emotions, negative dynamics drive decision-making and drive behavior. And your industry is replete with negative emotions and dynamics. And if you ignore those, you pretend that they're not there, they're going to wind up derailing your conversations further down the road. The flip side of that is that once you embrace the fact that negative emotions and negative dynamics drive decision-making and behavior, you put yourself at a distinct advantage because the people that you work with then become more predictable. You can begin to predict what they're going to do, what they're going to say, what they're going to ask next because of your clear understanding of that human nature response. So that's what it means from my perspective. And I would ask the same question of Marcella. When you hear that, ignore human nature at your own peril, how does that resonate with you specifically in the industry?
Yeah, it's replete with negative emotions, fear. We look at a transaction and it's filled with unknowns. So if we have to be more aware of ourselves, our own human nature, and be aware of the fact that we're dealing in an industry, working in an industry where we're facing human nature, dealing with loss of fear or fear of loss, excuse me, all the time.
So let's dive in a little deeper. This is an industry built on hope. And you're saying negative emotions drive decision making. And so the last thing agents ever want to deal with is negativity. They do everything in their power to avoid negativity and live in a constant state of hope. So Derek, Marcella, how do those two things go together?
Hope is not a bad component to have in your thought process. It just should not be your driving strategy. And unfortunately for many, it is. They're hoping that a prospective buyer is not going to push back on every single item in an inspection. They're hoping that they can convey what the comps look like for a seller adequately. They're hoping that nothing is going to go wrong. And that's, from my perspective, that's what makes agents look alike from the outside looking in. Now, you all know that you are not alike. You all know what your expertise is. But to a layman from the outside looking in, you know, Nicole is no different than Marcella. They all look the same. And a lot of that is predicated on the fact that we're not being transparent. We're not being genuine with the pitfalls that come with a transaction. You know for a fact that as soon as you get signatures on the line, that's when the work begins. That's not when the work ends. And we're hoping that the bad things that happened in a previous transaction don't rear their ugly head in this transaction. And the fact of the matter is they likely will. And you failing to address those proactively before they become an issue, you failing to prepare your client for possibilities that are negative in nature, you're doing them and you're doing yourself a disservice. You want to change the way they look at you? Tell them what's ahead of them, even if it's the worst thing possible. Because you take uncertainty out of the equation, and uncertainty is the mother of fear. And so instead of hoping nothing goes wrong, you tell them this could probably go wrong. This has happened in the past. I want you to be aware of this. And getting out in front of those things preemptively takes away all of that uncertainty. And as I mentioned, uncertainty is the mother of fear. Even if it's bad, if they know it's coming, you've given them an opportunity to brace themselves, because most people will not do that. Most people are afraid that if I mention these negatives preemptively, I'm going to send these people running for the hills. So what I'll do is I'll just sit back, keep my fingers crossed, and I'll deal with it when it occurs. What does that say about your genuineness? What does that say about your transparency? What does that say about you trying to demonstrate tactical empathy for the other side? And so hope, it's always good to have hope, but that should not be your overarching or your overriding motivation. Should not be your strategy. Marcel, anything to that?
Yeah, if you look at the foundation of hope, it's coming from a fear of losing something or protecting something. And so you can have hope, but hope without a strategy doesn't really get you anywhere. And so often in real estate, we hang on to the hope because it gives us positive feelings and what we feel is a connection with our clients. However, identifying where the hope is coming from, what they're hoping against, will actually connect you further with them and give them autonomy and start to build trust. So it's not dismissive of hope. It's just understanding where hope comes from.
And Regina, I'm going to call on you in a second, so get ready. Let me go back to Derek for a second. So this industry, in my opinion, is built on the false premise that agents win or lose business based on their presentation and, to a lesser degree, their commission. And their presentations are all based on painting the rosiest picture possible. No agent who hasn't taken this training ever wants to talk about what might go wrong, because in their mind, that means someone's not going to list their property with me. You know, everyone's talking about all the things that can possibly go right. Can you comment on that a little bit?
Well, it's not germane to just real estate. Salespeople all over the globe, they want to pitch gain, they want to pitch benefit, they want to pitch opportunity. And this ties back to that human nature response. That's not what moves people. You agents are on this call today because you're afraid. You made the decision to join us today because you are afraid. You're afraid of not progressing. You're afraid of not being as profitable as you otherwise could be. So my point is, everything that we do, fear is a component in there somewhere. And when you go into any meeting, whether it's a listing appointment or anything where you're pitching gain and you're pitching opportunity, that's not what gets people's attention. When you're pitching in gain and you're pitching opportunity, you are allowing the negative emotions and dynamics associated with that conversation to stay alive in their brain. And if it's alive in their brain, as you're pitching gain and opportunity, they're not listening to you. They're dealing with those, think of it as ping pong balls in a hopper. And you can write a negative emotion or dynamic on every one of those ping pong balls. And that's what's going on in your head. And so we start out sequencing our conversation with throwing all of our data and information on the table, saying, here's why I'm the best choice. Here's why I'm an expert. Here's the data that says these are what the property sold for in this area. Here's my marketing strategy. And they, at the end of that presentation, they tell you, I need to think about it. I'll get back to you. And you wait and you hope that they call you. And then they never do. And you're left scratching your head as to why. Because you didn't deal with those negative emotions and dynamics as a part of the presentation. There's going to be a time in every presentation where you're going to have to explain who you are, what you've done, and the data that supports why you are the right choice. But doing it too early without first going after the negative emotions and dynamics as seen by their side is a recipe for disaster. You know, Brandon used to say it's the equivalent of you throw a prime cut of meat at the foot of a lion and the lion looks at it, sniffs it, and walks away, and you can't figure out why. Well, that's because you didn't do any discovery on the front end. If you had have done discovery on the front end, you would have discovered that that lion had just eaten a goat and it wasn't hungry. Same thing applies here. Sequencing the conversation, generally speaking, is always going to be tactical empathy first. Your goal, your objective, your ask, your data, your information, your explanation comes last. And many people, real estate or not, get that backwards. We want to go in, throw it all on the table and say, here's why you should do it. And the other side goes, nope, not going to do it. Because you haven't taken the time to demonstrate for them that you understand how they're viewing this transaction, this conversation, you as an agent.
Regina, your comments on that.
I love to get the bad news out early. And I haven't given a presentation in, I don't know, at least 3 or 4 years now. And sometimes I do have a marketing book, it's a brag book, and sometimes I bring it to the second appointment, and many times they just go, oh, we don't need that. Why don't you give it to another client? It's like the presentation is meaningless. And, you know, I've really adopted the favorite and the fool. And it does it. So what I, as part of my, you know, mindset going into any of these appointments. So I have to just be fearless on my end with, you know, I charge 6%. That's my fee. And if I'm the favorite, they will hire me. Right? If I have bad news for people, or here's all the things that could go wrong in your transaction, or here's all the things you're really not going to like, pricing the property to sell, you know, doing the preparation that needs to be done to get you the highest price. Those things cost money. Paying me my commission if you want the best results. All of that stuff has to come out early because like we've just discussed, that stuff is running around in their brains, and I can't overcome that stuff by convincing them how awesome I am and how, you know, how great it's all going to go. I have to address the pitfalls early, how I'm going to handle them, of course. And then those questions are put to bed. It's much, much, much easier approach than I've ever had. I love not giving a presentation. I think my clients love not hearing a presentation.
And Steve, let me ask Regina a question real quick. So sure. Regina, why do you think that they have the confidence in you to do what you say you're going to do?
Because I'm very upfront and I don't have a lot of fluff in the conversation. So I'm not trying to create this, you know, Pollyanna-ish view of the world. They have fears and they have doubts, and I want to let them know that I know those things exist. I've run into them before. I've helped other people through them, and I'm going to help them through them as well. And when I'm able to get all of those things on the table, I had a conversation with someone today. She's a co-trustee on a property with a sibling, and they're very different personalities. And, you know, one of the things she was really concerned about was like my communication with her sibling and the dynamic there. And I was able to say, look, I understand the concerns that it's, you know, it sounds like you want me to make sure that in my communication, I preserve your relationship with your sibling. And she said the magic words, Derek, she said, that's right. And I knew right then that, you know, she wants to hire me. And now I have to go to the sibling and with the information that she's given me, you know, work with the sibling to make sure that he feels understood, right? That he feels I'm going to treat him fairly. That's the concern. And so I've dealt with a lot of, you know, families selling properties, and I know how to do this. And their concern isn't, the concern is not getting the property on the market and selling it. The concern for this family is that both of the trustees are treated fairly in the communication, the decisioning, that there's no, you know, I'm not partnering with one against the other, that kind of thing. And having that and knowing that in these family dynamics is so important because that's how they trust you.
That's the word that I was looking for. First of all, folks, understand what business you're in. You guys think you're in the real estate business, you're not. You are in the trust business. The sooner and the faster you start to demonstrate that you understand what the lay of the land looks like from their perspective, the faster that trust is going to be built. They don't tell her, take your marketing brag book and give it to another client. We don't need it, because they don't trust you. It's because they do, because you've took the time. Now, I don't recall exactly what they said that led to the label that you used, but the label that you used was not verbatim what they gave you out of their mouth. And my point out of their mouths. So my point for highlighting that is, when you take the time to articulate for someone something that they can't for whatever reason, there is no clearer demonstration that you are dialed into them. When you can use a label like, it sounds like you want my communication to be on point and flawless with your siblings. And I'm paraphrasing your label, but that's what you gave. That's not what she said, or that's not what the client said. They said something else. You picked up on the fact that they want me to make sure that my communication with the siblings is on point. And that's a fantastic way of going deeper than what was presented to you. In all of these conversations, there's going to be presenting dynamics or emotions, and that's primarily what's coming out of their mouth. And then there's going to be latent dynamics or emotions, what Regina picked up on. And when you can pick up on latent dynamics or emotions, things that they haven't said, man, that goes a long way into you building that trust-based influence faster. The other point I wanted to make is that when you do that, subconsciously, you are engaging the rule of reciprocity in that they count that as a favor. They count that as a plus, that you were able to identify what their perspective is. And so they feel like they owe you. And that is manifested in them not pushing back against you when you make different recommendations, not pushing back against you when you start talking about commission, not pushing back against you when you ask anything of them. Why? Because you took the time to first show them, I'm dialed in. This conversation is not all about me, but more importantly, it's about you.